Hey, Tommy from the Run Testers, and welcome to the Run Testers podcast. In this special, we are going to be talking about the London Marathon. So we have all done London Marathon a number of times, and in this podcast, we're going to be talking about hints, tips, advice that we can give you if you're planning on doing the race to make it go a little bit more smoothly. Hopefully, you'll find it useful. Let's dive in. Evening, evening people, what's going down?
Hey!
Hello.
Jane's back.
To be here.
I'm back.
Jane's how are we all doing?
Plus another one.
Yeah, maternity leave's over.
Yeah, Run Testers very strict maternity leave.
Run Testers have no maternity leave, so let's report them now.
Don't give you a red cent outside the first hour you're in the ward.
Yeah, no. I know that. You'll see tweets, won't you, from like groups. Where's she back? 6 weeks off? No, I want to be back. I'm here. Talk about London Marathon. Exciting.
Yeah. Big London Marathon pod.
Well, this is the London Marathon special. So we spoke about doing this in one of the pods this year, where quite a lot of us, all of us on this call, have done the London Marathon multiple times. Yeah. And we thought we'd do a podcast for all the people that are doing it this year. Maybe people who've never done it before and they don't know what to expect, and we can give them a bit of advice. And people who have done it before, but maybe want some more detailed advice on pacing and where to pick up the pace and all those sorts of things.
And people who are never planning on doing it, but just want to listen to stuff about the London Marathon. This is for you guys too.
Yeah.
I can't imagine
everyone's welcome.
Everyone's welcome, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I thought an easy way to start would be, I'll start with you, Jane.
Oh, God.
What is your relationship with London Marathon? How many have you done? What do you think of London Marathon?
I've done London Marathon 4 times, and it's how I started running, which I feel like is really boring when everyone says this, but it is true. I got a place on the ballot because I'm one of those annoying people, and I was like, cool, I'll run a marathon. And it was the worst day of my entire life until I gave birth. So it was just hell on earth. I was like, I'm never doing this again. Actually, that's really not positive, is it? Because people are going to listen to this who've never run a marathon before. It was the best day, but the worst day, because I hadn't trained properly. I had no idea what I was doing. I hadn't fueled properly because I thought gels were for losers. And I was like, I'm never, ever doing that again. And then the next day, I was like, that was the best day of my life. So the worst day, but the best day, actually the best day. And I've now done it 3 more times. So it got me into running. It made me want to run, and the crowds were amazing. And it was like, it wasn't the worst day of my life. The training was the worst thing I've ever done. And the marathon was such a hard day, but also such a good day. It's like a weird one, isn't it? It's like one of those things that is horrible, but we keep going back. But I don't know. Have I just put everyone off?
No, so well, it should be.
Has it got any better over the following 3 times?
Yes. It has. And actually, the last one I did last year, I did it. And actually, no, I think my favourite London Marathon was the COVID one, when it was in October. Because I was just like, remember when we couldn't go out the house? And that's all I kept thinking the whole way around. Like, look at this. And I'm going to go and watch. I thought I'd be able to run this year, but I think I was stupid to think that. So I'm going to go and watch, and I sob like a baby every time. It's just the best day, isn't it?
Cool. Then, Kieran, you've done it a few times.
Yeah, so I've done it 3 times, and it was my second ever marathon. I tried to get into it for my first marathon, but couldn't get into the ballot. Wasn't as lucky as Jane, ended up doing Paris the first one. And then, I've done it 3 times, a couple of times, done it as good for age, managed to qualify for it. And I think 2 out of the 3 times I've managed to run a PB on the course. So it's been a bit of a happy one for me. And like everyone, it was one of those I just wanted to tick off. London feels like one of the marathons that you sort of almost have to have done in order to consider yourself a marathoner in some ways. Yeah. And I've always kind of run pretty well there. Home crowd, always have my family there. It's got some real magic in it. It's got some, as we'll come on to later, there's some bits that you have to black out because they're not so nice, but there's some really wonderful magic moments in London. And there's nothing quite like coming onto that red tarmac when you're sort of getting to the finish and you know you've got a little bit left to go. Always run well. I'm not in this year because I missed out. I'm basically a little bit too slow for my age.
Too young is where you could say it.
Or I'm too young. Or I was too young when I ran my fast race and then I got, Or I wasn't, no, it was the other way around. I wasn't old enough when I ran the time. Yeah. So next year, maybe. I'm now at the bottom bracket of the older age group. We won't say which.
And now, now you dominate.
Now I should be able to get in.
I've got my mate who's just about to turn into a new age group, and he's been so excited. He can't wait to absolutely wreck people.
Well then, go on then, Nick. As you've done it a few times as well, haven't you?
I'm on a street. I've done six Londons.
Blimey.
I've basically done it since I did my first one. I've done it every year since then, except when they did the virtual one. I didn't bother with the virtual one, but now I get in on my time, so I can. I've done Red Start, Good Friday Start, and then Championship Start the last four times, and this time this year as well. And yeah, I really like it. I find it quite a hard course to run very well. I PB'd a couple of times at London. My first sub three was there. That was my second marathon, Barcelona, for my first one. And then PB'd there a year later or so. And then I've had a couple of iffy runs since then, and won quite a lot. I ran with Jill one year, a week after running Berlin. And last year, I didn't run all out because I think that was when I had. I can't remember what I did last year. I thought I banged my knee on a radiator. That was banged my knee on a radiator.
Oh, yeah. Radiator gate.
Entertaining my child. This is all to come, Jane. Everyone bangs their knee on a radiator and it rules them out of running competitively for a while.
You don't have to speak about it all the time on the podcast, though.
Weren't you waiting for Helen to give birth? Wasn't that also?
No, I was entertaining my daughter in the bath and I leapt across a room and hit a radiator. It's all in earlier pods. People can find it.
All fully labeled if you want to find out about that.
This year I'm going all out. We'll talk about it later on in the podcast. I find it quite a tricky course compared to like Valencia and London and Berlin, because it's a bit more, it's not slow at all. It's just a bit more up and down. You've got to pace yourself a bit more cleverly. But yeah, it's absolutely brilliant. The COVID one was just the best day out. The one after the COVID one, I've never been so happy, like, you know, running through. I didn't have a great run that day, but it was just so nice to see all the crowds out there. And last year, actually, it was peeing it down with rain. And I think it was the loudest it's ever been, like around Tower Bridge and stuff. I'm not a very emotional person, but it's one of the few areas I get quite emotional with London Marathon. It's pretty intense at times, actually. And all my run with the running club in London, so they're all there on drink stations. It's a good one to keep doing because it's very cheap, actually, in the world of running, the London Marathon, although the price has gone up a bit this year, but also easy to get to, which helps as well.
You picked out your headband for this year?
Same headband as always. It's whether, the only quick decision is whether I wear glasses or contacts or bother with contacts. So that's the main decision. I've got a new hat. No, I might actually wear my hat actually this year, I have to say.
Wow.
I've been wearing a hat a lot more.
But, watch out, London. Nick's got a hat.
Yeah. It's, could be wearing a hat. Could be wearing, we'll find out on the day.
Big exclusive there for people.
it's not set in stone, Tom, so we're not sure.
Right. Well, we just have to be excited on the day. People are looking out in the photos.
Tone of your voice suggests you're not going to be excited, Tom. And that actually hurts a little bit. So, anyway, how many times do you run London?
I'm less excited about you mentioning it on the next four pods.
Don't get me on then.
Probably won't.
I'm not here next month. You'll know why.
Well, I think I've done it three times. Never done a proper London. Every time I've run it is first two times I did it, I don't think I trained at all for it.
Well, you, like Jane, were in the Gels Are For Losers camp for about 10-15 years, weren't you?
not any nutrition. I think the first two times I didn't do it properly. And the third time was during my injury period where I had that calf issue.
Oh, yeah.
And I was on for like a 3:15 and I ended up at 32K. Calf just went and I basically walked in the last 10K.
There's some good photos of you looking really angry that day, I believe.
That was the tail end of my injury period then. And it was it tail end? It might have been basically the next time I raced a marathon was Bilbao when I realized I could run a bit faster.
And you're good for age this year, first time, right?
Good for age this year, yeah. So I feel I've got to do it. But I've got Boston the week before. So it's not going to be a fast one for me. I don't know if I'll ever do a fast London. Something always seems to go wrong for London that I can't.
It's a little tricky in our line of work. It's a very busy work week as well. There's lots of events and stuff like that you kind of should attend. True. Whereas like Berlin, Valencia are so much quieter and easier to relax and focus on the race. But
All right then. Well, should we jump in and give some advice on London Marathon?
Let's do it.
All right, well, I've got a list of things here to talk through, and the first one of those is the Expo. Who wants to pick up the Expo? What is the London Marathon Expo like, and what do you need to know about it?
Kieran loves the Expo. Talk about it.
I love an Expo. It's in the middle of nowhere. Let's start with that. It's miles from anywhere, and you have to get on a kind of toy train, the DLR, to get there. It's kind of a, yeah, it's kind of way out for me anyway. I live in West London, so it's like I might as well go into a different country. It's easier to get to Valencia for their expo.
I live in East London, and it is faster door to door to the Valencia Marathon Expo than the XL Centre in East London.
And yeah, so huge exhibition centre out on the DLR, and it's in, you know, it's like a big old huge kind of cavernous space. And it's big, you know, as the expos go, the London Marathon one is probably one of the biggest that I've been to out of all of the 50 odd marathons that I've done. Yeah. And if I have one piece of advice for anyone, it's like you can choose the different days. If you can go on a Thursday and you want it to be nice and quiet and you want to get through all the queues really quickly, go on the Thursday. Friday will be busier. Saturday will be mayhem. If you like it to be mayhem, go on the Saturday. That's when there'll be the most bars and there'll be the most craziness and there'll be all the things going on. But I think if you go on the Thursday, every time I've done it, it's quite quick. It's good fun. There is lots of stuff there if you want to get involved in buying last minute shoes and gels and all of that kind of stuff. And there tends to be, I think of all the expos I've been through, there tends to be more sort of fun interactive stuff and you can meet more people, and it's one of the livelier expos that I've been to.
For anyone listening or watching this, the expos, this is where you've got to go to pick up your bib essentially and some of the bits and pieces, and you've got to take your ID with you and information about is that it, you just need your ID?
You need an ID.
Yes, that was my thing to remember, because I've never remembered ID, and 1 year I had to go all the way home and go all the way back. So take ID.
Well worth remembering that before you get all the way there.
And I would say it is a substantial amount of walking, because the XL is huge. Mm. And another reason not to go on Saturday is, you know, it would be equivalent of a shakeout run walking around the XL. And you have to go a certain way, because they want you to go past pretty much certain, you know, attractions like whoever's the main sponsor and that kind of thing. So
the problem a lot of people have with the expo is that if you are, because we all live, or I did live in London, that you actually... is relatively easy to get there on an evening, but people who are traveling over and just for the weekend, it's quite expensive to stay in London over the weekend, so you might have to go to the expo on a Saturday,
which is why it's the busiest day, of course, but you know, it's certainly, again, probably go early if you can, but it is I don't know, they can't, I suppose all major marathons don't mail the numbers out, do they really, but it's a nice thing to go to, but it is a bit of an extra hassle in an already busy week.
You basically get, every time I've been to it, and I think this is the same with pretty much every expo, apart from the little ones we've been to, like Bilbao Expo, where it's just a room.
It's just us.
They basically design it. It's massive. And they basically design it so you zigzag through all of the places they want you to, the shops, basically, that they want you to look at the start. And it's New Balance, isn't it, they do?
This year, they've got a massive thing you have to go through.
So you'll be winding through the New Balance shops, which is very tempting because you're excited about doing the marathon and you see all the London Marathon kit and you think, oh, I'll pick up a hat and a jacket. So just be aware of that, because it can get a little bit easy to fill your bag with stuff and want to buy everything.
There's a couple other things. I think one of the differences that you get on London as well, they do have stages and they have people giving, if you know, if you're a first timer, there is a main stage where they'll talk you through tips and stuff, and that is quite useful actually if you've never done it before, for that kind of last minute kind of advice. Some of it, don't listen to, you know, you want to listen to some of it, don't listen to too much. There's not much that you can change at that point. The other thing is they often have the Kipchoge travelator it tries to get you to run at the fastest pace. Maybe I don't know which one what they'll do.
It must be the world record. It's got to be Kelvin Kipchoge's pace now. Yeah.
Don't go on that. Don't go on that.
Certainly don't go in your jeans. Yeah.
People fall over, get injured. You've done all that training. You don't need to prove that right there and then. Save that for another day when you're not actually racing.
Yeah, it's fast. I wouldn't go with that. I would say on the stage as well, if the advice isn't great, just maybe take some headphones and listen to this podcast again. That would be a good way.
That's a good idea. The other bit of advice I'd give for the expo is I see a lot of people buying new running shoes and stuff at the expo, and because you've just bought new running shoes, you're very excited about wearing them, and I know people that have bought them and used them for the marathon the next day. That's not a good idea either, because if you're not used to wearing the shoes, it's a big risk on marathon day. Same with the kit as well. If you're going to buy a load of running kit from there and really want to wear it on the marathon day, it's a risky decision to make if you've never worn it before.
But it is exciting, right?
It's a nice buzz to it.
You walk through and they play, is it Chariots of Fire, what they're playing when you walk through?
Yeah, I think
it's always the same song. It's exciting. You get your number. You can take some cool Instagram pics. You can. It's a fun.
Try some
fun,
freebies.
Yeah, fun hour, I guess. I wouldn't spend more than an hour there.
No. I say there is a tip. If you have more than one number, which is a few, I think the Abbott, when they did the Abbott things there, and if you're in championship, you get more than one number, they often do not know that when they're giving you your number, and you have to make it, you have to say, I need a second number, because obviously they're used to handing out one number. So if you're doing like the world age group thing, I think there was the same kind of thing. It's worth, otherwise you walk away with one number and you have to go around again to get your second one. I've done that.
Okay, next one is morning of the race. So getting to the start line and the event village itself. So I lived in London, so it was never really that hard for me to get to the start line from where I live. But it gets really, really busy, and it's worth knowing that a lot of the transport is absolutely rammed on the morning of the race.
Standing a lot on trains and stuff. It's
standing a lot on trains, and people are getting up really, really early. So they're busy from the early hours of the day.
Especially if you've got like a later start time, you know, people will have been going all day. So it's chaotic. Mm-hmm. Plan your route. And also you will, I don't know if it happens to you guys, but when there's that many people, you start to lose cellular signal and 4G and stuff like that. And suddenly you've got to plan your route in advance, basically.
Yeah. And leave like
a... But it is free, isn't it?
Hour. Yes.
Flash your number, it's free.
Yeah, I think it is. Although last year I was told it wasn't, but it's normally, it's free.
Yeah, it is definitely. Free. But I've been charged before when they just don't do it.
Yeah, they probably just don't know.
Yeah.
The other flip side to all of that as well is it's mad busy, but on the trains, again, like you're crammed in, there's a good energy to it. I mean, there's a nervous energy, but you do meet a lot of runners and there's good chat and there's a good sort of camaraderie that you find as you're sort of traveling down from wherever it is that you're traveling down. Hmm. I think I'm always like, I'm a really kind of early to the airport kind of person, and I always get there way early. And then sometimes, depending on which start, because there's three different starts, there's some of the cafes, if you get in early, actually you can get a seat and just be in the warm for a little bit before you walk up to the main start. And in some of those, some years you can find, and actually there's toilets and not everyone does it. So if you're early enough, you can take shelter and it's just a bit more comfortable. You can kind of get your heart rate down and relax a bit before you go up and do what you've got to do at the start.
Well, that is a very smart move. So I do this at every race, but if you're walking to a big race and you spot an opportunity to go to the toilet that doesn't look like it's difficult, take it.
Always.
Because when you get to the start, when you get to that event village, you could be queuing for a very long time.
And go. First thing you get to the event village, just go. Don't think I'll sort a couple of bits out first.
Yeah. Yeah. Get in that queue first straight away. Yeah. So if you see a toilet and you're not sure if you want to go and try it anyway, because you might not get the opportunity later.
Especially if you're a woman, because the toilet queues are double the men's.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like that's a life tip.
Yeah.
I do that. I now do that all the time.
Just getting old too. Okay. I'll tell you, the other thing is it's a longer walk from the stations than you might think. And so you want to take that slowly. Last you want to be is running that bit to get to the start line for your way. So give it plenty of time. And also, if you're affiliated with the club at all around the southeast, actually even further afield, and maybe you don't spend that much time talking to the club, you maybe aren't aware of stuff, they often have coaches to London Marathon. I always get a coach with my club to London Marathon. I wasn't aware of it for a year or so because, you know, I was just racing and didn't really look at the groups. It's worth asking around, because if you can sit on a coach with your club mates for a nominal fee, it's quite an easy drive to Greenwich at that time and all the roads are empty. So, and you get dropped very close to, I get dropped very close to the blue start, which is, you know, for some people that's great. And it's not that far a walk to the other starts. And it's obviously a lot more relaxing to go and do a coach ride with people you know, rather than, you know, trying to work out the trains.
Yeah. I'd also say, as great as the atmosphere is on the trains and everyone's talking, I am someone who I don't want to hear someone telling me their PB and their race strategy and every race I've ever run. I am not in that headspace. I want to just calm down and focus on the race and what I'm going to do. So I think I put my headphones in. I probably look like a resting bitch face on the train. Everyone's having a great time. Everyone's chatting to Kieran and I'm on my own in the corner because I don't want to hear it.
Kieran's long gone. Kieran's in a cafe by then.
Yeah, Kieran's sat in a... Kieran was there 2 hours before I left. So, do you mean... But I think it's cool to just be in your own little headspace and listen to this podcast, listen to some music, listen to something and keep that in right to the start line and look after your own... You know, don't get caught talking to the person that wants to tell you about their race. Focus on your own, I'd say, would be my tip.
There's a couple more things as well. The starts are kind of... They're quite open. They can be quite windswept. And they're grassy, if I remember rightly. And so definitely do that thing where you take clothes to dress a little bit warmer and you can toss away. Another good thing, if it's been really raining, because I think the grass on some of them is quite long, it can be handy to take carrier bags, tie them around your shoes. I've made a mistake of starting that race with soaking wet feet because you've been tramping across a field essentially to go in back to and from the toilet, and that's not a nice thing to start with wet socks. So that's another one. Or get some of those, you can get shoe covers and stuff. So
yeah, 100% on the shoes, especially, you know, you've got your amazing race day super shoes and they're damp and slippery for the first kilometer because you've been walking around in mud. Yeah, not ideal.
Okay, so what can people expect when they're starting the race? They're queuing up, ready to go. They're in the wave. I suppose that's where we should start, really, getting into the right wave.
They'll let you move back, not forward, won't they? So if you've been over, I'd say if you've got injured or you've predicted a start time that you can't achieve, I'd go back and I wouldn't go off in a wave that's too quick, because you'll get swept up and you'll go too fast. I think, yeah, don't be afraid to do that.
Otherwise, you feel like you're being stampeded, and that's not a nice feeling for the first bit.
Absolutely.
And throw you out, kind of. Yeah.
I would say it can be a bit nightmarish to start. I think normally, if I'm in my start group, I'm, you know, going out at the right pace of people, it's okay. But I remember the championship start and the Good for Age start, there's a lot of different times in there. The championship starts all one time, but the Good for Age start, the times could be very different to qualify for that, right? So it's very busy, and then the wave comes steaming through behind you. And I think that's a general thing for the first couple of clays. It's it's very easy to get annoyed or run too quick because you're annoyed at people elbowing past you and stuff like that. And when I ran it with Jill, I was amazed how like brutal it gets around that sub-3 mark. But it levels out quite quickly.
I suppose at that pace, a lot of people don't necessarily get their pacing exactly right for that first bit. So it is all over the pace. But you also, you've got the funneling as well, haven't you, in London Marathon, which means that you may get to the point where you're thinking, this is all great, I found my pace, I'm in the right bit. And then suddenly loads of people join you from another side and you've got to pick the whole thing again.
The join around was around 5K, the three routes merge, and it's usually okay. It's, you know, by then there's been 5K, people have gone out a bit, but there were loads of people going too quick. It's really important to run your own race at that stage because it will feel so easy to just go with them.
And it's downhill, isn't it? The first bit's downhill, and it is very easy to get carried away. And the other thing, some people have sort of in the past have tried to say, if you've gone from two different start locations and you kind of want to run the race together, we'll meet up when it merges. That won't happen.
No.
I mean, find someone, that's impossible. It's carnage,
I think I've not once managed to meet up with one of my friends from a different start, and it was at mile 22 we eventually caught up with each other at the right kind of pace. The only reason I could see him is because he's massive, he's a swimmer, so there was like 20 runners hiding behind him from the wind, and he was very obvious. But forget those people. Unless you're willing to carry your phone and see what checkpoint they're at, you're not going to find those people from a different start. It's very tricky. And the hills in the first half, I think, are the reason why London is a hard race to pace, because you fly down those hills, and you might as well fly down. It's not costing you any extra effort, but when you get to the bottom, it is so hard to decelerate again because they're early enough in the race that you feel amazing and you hit the bottom of the hill and you're running 20 seconds quicker a K than you should be, and you go, well, no, fine, you know, and that's where the race is lost, I think.
And I think it's really hard. I'm never going to be at Nick's end of the course, so I'm in the kind of really crowded bit of the London Marathon course, and it's really hard when you get to mile 3 and you see a pacer from a different start. And it's a psychological thing, isn't it? You think, oh, I'm behind that pacer, so I need to speed up. But actually, that pacer from a different start, the people with it are from a different start. They started it. Did you mean it's really hard? I think it's to, like Kieran said, run your own race and don't get swept up in, oh, I'm now behind the 4-hour pacer because they're from a different start. Do you know what I mean? And I think even the pacers at London Marathon, they do an amazing job, but I think I would ignore them personally. I've never run with a race pacer because I think they're always a little bit out, and I don't know what you guys think about it, but I would ignore the pacers and run your own race personally. But if you're going to stick with a pacer, make sure they're wearing the flag from your start, not a different start, because they'll be at different time.
Because they just talk to them, as I would always talk to them and say, how are you going to run this? I want to know whether they're going to be, you know, because some people will try and go out a little bit faster to save a bit of time, or they might be thinking, I'm going to bank a bit of time because I know a bit that's coming up. But if you haven't run like that, or you're not used to it, it can just unsettle you. So try and work out what their plan is going
to
be.
It's also just so crowded around them that some of them, like you say, can have different strategies for dealing with that, to go out quick, to try and get out of the crowd, or to just be slow at the start because it's so crowded. So yeah, like I ran my first half through London using the pacers, where what I did was, like you talk, Jane, they come from different starts, they're going at different speeds. So I saw a pacer for a sub hour that I knew was going faster than the pacer from mine. So I thought, well, if I'm going with them, I'm definitely ahead of the sub three for my wave because they've clearly started before them. And then I was all right there. Yeah, I was able to move away from them and go a bit quicker. But yeah, you've got to be a bit careful with them. It's just, it is so crowded around those pacers as well. And it's so intense. I don't know how they do it.
All right, well, what about that? We talked about the what it's like on the course, but the course itself, what can people expect from it? You've got two halves of the marathon, and they're very different types of a race, not just because of the ground that you're running on and the decline at the start. But for me, the first half is, you know, knuckle down, get into it, and just sort of make your way to that Tower Bridge point, because that's, for me, is when the race, you know, everyone talks about the marathon starting at 25K or whatever, but for London, most of the stuff that you see happens after that distance, because you come through Tower Bridge and it's almost like, you know, you're in London then, and you start to see all the sights that you expect from the London Marathon.
Yeah. I mean, I think that first six miles out east is, it's pretty dull, sort of running through residential streets and stuff. There's not, yeah, I mean, you've got Cutty Sark comes before Tower Bridge, but, and that's a bit of a highlight, but there's not, I find that there's not an awful lot.
Love Cutty Sark, Kieran. Don't do it down. Cutty Sark's amazing.
Yeah, but you sort of spin around that bend, the cameras are up there.
That's the first time, exactly.
Camera, and, you know, there's a bit of that. But I find the first bit, Tom's right. I think you've just got to, there's not too much excitement there in the first bit. So it's about kind of getting yourself settled into the race and almost kind of just trying to get into a flow in that first bit. There will be some kids already trying to hand you jelly babies at mile three. And yeah, there is crowds kind of already lining the course from the very start.
Yeah, it's crazy now.
I would say, if you have anyone that's willing to do the journey, get people at that. Because I've had people that have seen me at Cutty Sark and been like, God, you looked awful. You look like you're having an awful day. And they've seen me at Tower Bridge and been like, you were flying. So do you mean, I think that first bit is hard, because you go down the hill and then you're like, oh, it's happening. And I always find that first bit to Cutty Sark really hard, to try and get people to come to like mile five. Do you mean, and see you right at the start? Because I think you need the support then as much as you need it at mile 20, personally, as someone who has to drag themselves around. I don't know. You guys are quicker than me. Maybe you don't. Well, I would want people at the beginning.
Yeah. Well, there's the logistics, isn't there? If you've got people coming to see you, there's a good way to actually get quite early on, which is probably around the Bermondsey bit, and then move around to two other different areas to finish your course. And maybe, I think, is it, I can't remember how they did it. I think it might be Canary Wharf or something, where people who watched me before.
There's a bit where they can see you twice, isn't there? That's Canary Wharf, where they can see
that's
you, like,
on the way to and from. On the way to and from, yeah. Shadwell?
I think Shadwell, yeah. Yes. Shadwell is the best place, because you cross over and there's plenty of time because you're doing the out and back. And from Shadwell, there's still enough time to get back to closer to the finish as well. Depending on how fast the runner is, you can do Shadwell on that bit, see them twice, and then still get along to Embankment.
Get to the end. Mm. But that, I know we'll come on to the bits we hate, but that out and back bit is the worst bit, isn't it? Because that's when I see Nick running past me the other day and think, God, he's going home. He's going home and I've got to go.
I hate that bit.
The other night.
I've been walking a couple of times on that bit, so it's all right. It's good to see that.
When you're coming out on that bit, you see all the people coming back and you think, oh, great, it's not going to be that, this bit's not going to be that far. No, but when you come back round on it, you're like, that was so far. To get round, that's and it really shows you how.
Well, I think that's what it starts with. I think the first half of the London Marathon before Tower Bridge is very easy racing. I find that the easiest bit, because it is much like every city marathon. It's residential streets. There's a much better crowd than most places. I haven't done New York, obviously, but that's obviously meant to be amazing. But it's, you know, there's downhills and then lots of level stuff. It's very easy to get into pacing. It's, you know, obviously you're feeling good first. I think that's where you just. It's very easy, I think, as a race, part of the race. The second half is not just because the second half is tricky. I think there's a lot more turns. There's ups and downs under bridges and stuff like that. I think it's a much harder race mentally and physically, the second half of London Marathon, which is why I think it's a hard race to pace, because hard to negative split London really well. But yeah, and part of that is Canary Wharf, where obviously you lose GPS, and also it's just, it is twisty, it's high buildings. It is still really well supported now on the Isle of Dogs, which it didn't used to be, like around Mudchute. It used to be quite quiet there, but the last couple of years it's been wall-to-wall people still. But it's definitely, I think, slightly sparser than the first half of the race, and just less fun. And I do think that 32K mark London is tough, like, because if you can get through the next 5 or 6, 7K, then you're back to Shadwell and then into the real crowds and into, like you say, Tom, like London that you recognise, and it's really exciting and you're heading for home along the river.
Yeah.
The other thing, I think Tower Bridge is a moment, and it's a huge moment. There's good stats that show that everybody's kind of fastest mile tends to be the mile after Tower Bridge, because you arrive on Tower Bridge, the crowds are incredible. There's this real kind of adrenaline moment. You've got there's often the TV helicopters are up above, and lots of people get kind of fired out of Tower Bridge, really pumped up, and then run a mile that's way quicker than it should be. And then they go into that kind of out and back, and then suffer. Yeah. So that's one to watch. You know, you enjoy that moment, but remember you've got a long way to go still then. And that feeling of sort of invincibility that you're going to get as you come across Tower Bridge with the hairs standing up on the back of your neck there's a long way to go. That's not going to last. So
it's crazy. Cause it's downhill off the bridge as well. And you're coming to the halfway mark is off once you're off Tower Bridge. Yeah. So it's like you come off Tower Bridge downhill, like roaring, you're flying. You see the halfway mark in the distance, you cane it to that. And it's like, I hit halfway. And yeah, you've run, like you say, your quickest mile. And it's now, like last year in the rain, it was the whole half mile, probably K before Tower Bridge, was almost as loud as Tower Bridge. Everyone's gone to that area and they've just actually camped up near the bridge. It was unbelievable for about a mile and a half, and it's impossible not to speed up a little bit. But yeah, it's really hard to then pull it back, because you're heading into the out and back of the Isle of Dogs, which is not the same.
Okay, so the finish line, one of the biggest finish lines of any marathon. What can people expect? Why is it such an important finish line for people who do London?
So you see the palace and then you turn and you see the finish line, and it's just honestly the best feeling in the world, isn't it? But the one thing I would say is that bit before the finish line, you go from miles to meters, don't you? And it's like, and then yards, and you go into all these different, and you're like, how far is
it? You go through yards?
You see the palace.
Yeah,
you do. It goes like, it's just bonkers, because you're like, what's
that?
That
is the original yard, isn't it? Well, no, it's not there, but it's a different palace, but they moved it for a palace, I suppose. I think it's the
palace. But you see the palace and you know you're home, and it's just, it is great. And then you cross the line, you get your medal, and then you've got the longest walk of your life to get to Horse Guards Parade.
And then a fight for your bag.
You've got a fight for your bag, and then you've got to go and hobble to Horse Guards, but you don't care at that point.
Well, that last bit before the finish line is one of the longest sections of the race for me, because when you're coming down the first section at St. James's Park, you think, oh, there's all the crowds, I've got to be at the finish line. And you turn around the corner and you go, oh my goodness, I've got to go all the way around the other side now.
When you hit that red tarmac, it's really easy to think, this is it, it's done, that's the point to kick, or whatever, you've got anything left, you've got to push it. It is not, you've still got half, I think it's like even like half a mile around that corner.
Ignore it, kick, you're nearly there.
It's a good distance. But the crowds on that first bit up to the corner by Palace, where there's the most energy and it's the best. Actually, when you turn the corner and start coming back down the mall, and it's one of my least favourite things about London, you get into that kind of VIP section where often there's no one there, and it's actually very quiet. So my word of advice is to really, really enjoy those crowds. The minute you hit the red tarmac, enjoy those crowds. Don't kick yet, but just soak that bit up. Circle round past Buck Palace, and then that last bit, there won't be that kind of high energy cheering for the last maybe 150 metres.
Close enough though, I think.
You're home.
Exactly, yeah. I would say that that's my wife comes to watch with our kids now, is on Birdcage Walk, which is the first bit of the red tarmac before you turn the corner. And it's quite a nice place to meet, because obviously you're very near the end, so when you have to come for the end, the park's all around. It's a good place for kids to play while they wait for the person. No, the kids don't care, you know. I mean, my oldest one now recognised me on the run, but yeah. But you know, when you hit the red tarmac, I go for it. Kick, doesn't matter. If you die halfway, you're still halfway there, and it's still like, then it's only like a quarter of a mile. You'll get round.
You've never done London Marathon and been slowly walking, jogging your way to finish line like I have.
I've walked most of third last London. Last time I went for a real hard run at London, I was walking quite a lot in the second half.
Really?
What time did you finish though?
2:33. But
not walking that much then. Okay, so you cross the finish line. What happens after that? Most marathons tend to be quite tricky after the finish line, the most big marathons. What what advice can we give to people after they cross that finish line to maybe find people or just work out where to go?
Pick a number on Horse Guards Parade. No, a letter, sorry. Yeah, there's letters everywhere. Yeah. Alphabet's there. Go and stand under that letter. It's the worst cellular, whatever it's called, 4G, 5G signal you'll have in London is Horse Guards Parade on Marathon Day. You're very unlikely to be able to get texts and calls through. So you pick a letter in advance to meet under if you can.
Yeah.
And a good tip is pick a letter that people are unlikely to go for, like X or Y or something. Don't go for the obvious ones. I think people sort of go for their surnames. But yeah, but go for one that most people maybe won't go to.
There.
My advice is that if you're going with family, get them to go and find a place in a restaurant or a bar because because they get absolutely rammed. So the time when I did it and my family were there, they waited for me at the letter on the Horse Guards Parade, but I came in at like 4:30 then, so many people had already come in at that time. They couldn't find anywhere to find any food. So if you have the opportunity, send them off and say you'll meet them there at some point. Get a reservation somewhere.
Well, it's even easy if you wobble through to Trafalgar Square and meet by under the Lions as well. It's actually not much in terms of the difference, and that's there'll be less crowds over that way if you want to sort of.
And you're going to be going that way anyway, probably, aren't you? So yeah. I would say Horse Guards Parade, if it's a sunny day, is very exposed and there's not a lot of places, you know, to be shaded. So you don't want to be there for too long if you're already feeling quite rough.
Yeah, and there is a changing tent and like a feeding tent. Do you mean you can go to Horse Guards Parade and get changed and feed your kid? And do you mean you can? It is a good place to go if you want to somewhere to get changed without being in a pub toilet or something, and there's a medical tent if you need medical help.
And in your drop bags, put a battery pack with a phone cable. I've made that mistake. Got to the end, phone was completely dead. No way to contact anyone. I had to go and sit in the EE shop on the Strand, charge my phone.
Very popular EE shop after a marathon.
So stick a phone, just in case. You never know.
I'd also say, cross the finish line, I would go straight. I know you'll feel terrible. You want to sit down for like half an hour. Get your bag as quick as you can because the queues get nuts. And also, by the time you're then ready to get your bag, your body will have cooled down. Even on a hot day, I've like been shaking, turning blue because you've just run a marathon. Your core temperature's all over the shop. You need to have the layers that are in your bag. So I would stagger to get your bag before you really sit down and do nothing.
Yeah. And then also the organisers, or there's various partners that give you discounts at places around London on after the marathon on the Sunday, but also some of the days afterwards as well. So make sure you check those out because some of them are actually really good. So you get like free drinks and food and stuff.
You get places, a burger, There's Bill's, the classic London restaurant. Bill's does something, and Franco Manca used to. I think it still does. Yeah. Franco Manca does a pizza Sunday, Monday. I mean,
you could be very lucky to get the ones that are near Trafalgar Square, but you know.
Yeah, you need to. Some of them don't let you book. Some do let you book. There's that one. It's like a deer in the logo that lets you book, but it's a bit further away, I think. You can also go to. Oh, you can go and get your thing from Tracksmith as well. That's a bit of a schlep up to Marylebone if you want to get a printed poster with your time on it, which is quite nice.
Yes, yeah.
Worth doing.
Okay, so any final tips or advice for people doing the London Marathon this year?
London is one of the races where I would probably manually split on your watch. I think the first half of the race is fine on GPS. It's very, you know, it's residential street. It's nice and open. You'll get the pacing will be pretty much right. You hit Canary Wharf, and then there's lots of tunnels and stuff in the second half of the race. There's high buildings. It's a hard place to, you know, if you are using your watch to pace the race in the marathon, I would take manual splits around Canary Wharf at least. But in general, just to roughly know where you're actually running, because I've had massive accelerations detail even with modern watches, which are very good. It's a hard rate if you are looking for that, you know, that pacing strategy. The first half of the race is fine. The second half is carnage around Canary Wharf, and it is just, you know, you just won't be right basically.
And I'd say if at all possible, if you're coming from out of town, if you're in London in time, go and run the last 5K of the course, the bit where you come out the kind of final tunnel from Embankment. Know what that is. It helps so much to have that banked in your mind, familiar for when you sort of come out there and you're feeling tired. And subconscious knows what's left, and your body will unlock a bit more. It's just nice to know that last bit. I find it's kind of a really good trick to familiarize yourself if you've got time and you can. If you're in your training, maybe you can go and do a bit more. Have one run where you go and run a bit of that last bit of the course.
Shakeout run.
That's a good idea. That tunnel, coming out of that tunnel it always hits me because it's that tunnel was so bleak and all the men are going for a wee and it's just a weird place. And then you come out and it's a wall of sound. And you're like, where am I? So that is
it's
a good tip.
Very bright.
I wish I'd done that.
It's so bright on the eyes coming up out of this little hill up, but it's not a bad hill, that one. And yeah, it is pretty nice. It is horrible in that tunnel. It's, you know, there's worse things than peeing in there as well.
Oh God. I would also say, I don't know, I'm on the fence, but put your name if you need the crowds are incredible at London, aren't they? It's the best day out. Put your name on your top, embrace it, soak it up, like enjoy the crowds because I don't know, there's a magic, isn't there, in London, and I think just try and enjoy it because it's the best.
It's the ultimate time to be cheesy and really lean into it because it is just the 100%. Best atmosphere. And people, the other thing is, if you don't put your name on your thing and you are from London, it's quite fun because people, everyone watches London. So obviously put your name in your bib, but if someone shouts your name, look for them because it will be like someone from your primary school who vaguely recognizes you or something like that. You go, oh, who's that? And it's just really nice. Helps you tick off the
mark. Download your playlist before you get to the start line, because every year I do this and I get there and then for the first 5K I've got no music because I'm not downloading it and Spotify can't get reception and I'm like buffering in and out and it's chaos. And download everything you need because you'll have no phone signal from the minute you get there till probably about Tower Bridge. So just download everything you need, a podcast, music, whatever.
I'd say on headphones. I don't use headphones at London generally, but if you've got bone conduction headphones, are they loud enough at London when the crowds are going?
No, but that works quite well, really, because if you're doing a big marathon, the quiet bits, you can hear the music, and then the bits where you've got the crowd, you hear the crowd. That's sort of what you want anyway. But they work quite well for that from that point of view. But you can always hear something.
What are you trying to listen to? Your Alan Partridge audiobook like I do? You're missing key bits.
No, I listen to high-octane dance music when I'm when I'm trying. I probably will listen to Alan Partridge when I'm doing London, actually, this year.
Kieran likes his European dance music, obviously.
Not appropriate. I think the other thing, there's going to be lots of people out there who are going to run London who aren't necessarily running for a PB. It might be the only time you ever get into London. If your family are there, it's a special day. If you run past them and you see them, take 10 seconds, 15 seconds to get a photo or go and say, give them a hug. It's kind of, you never know when you might get back to that London Marathon again, because if you've gotten through the ballot, all of that kind of stuff. And it is a special race and a special moment. I think it's definitely worth making those memories and capturing them on the day, if you're not running all out for a PB, that is.
Didn't you run back for your little boy?
I did. Yeah. I mean, we were supposed to meet on Embankment and I couldn't kind of connect with them. We missed, and I was running up and down Embankment. I think I did like an extra sort of mile and a half going up and down. But eventually I found him and it was worth it. Everybody hated me, but yeah.
Yeah, you need very specific instructions as to where your family are in London, because it is hard to spot people if they're like, I just saw one of my kid like on the Birdcage Walk, even when it's a bit more sparse, like at the last second I was scanning the whole crowd and just saw them. It's quite hard to do that the first time, obviously you don't really know the course that well, but yeah, just try and think of somewhere very specific.
Well, I think that'll do us for the London Marathon. If you are listening to this or watching this and you're doing London Marathon, good luck. And myself, Nick and Mike are all doing it this year. So if you see us, are you wearing your Runcester vest, Nick?
I cannot. I am in the championship race. You have to wear a club. We're not a UK affiliated club, so I've got to wear my club vest.
Right. So ignore Nick then if you see him. But if you see me or Mike, give us a shout and we'll wave back.
I'll take a shout.
No, you're not part of the team if you're...
I've got a teal headband. Maybe I will wear it for that reason. Yeah.
Well, you can wear your Runcester cap, can't you? Oh, no, you've got your new hat to wear.
I could wear my Runcester cap. I'm not sure about what the rules are on branding, actually. Anyway, I probably wouldn't wear my Runcester cap. I don't know. I feel a bit off in the champs tent.
Good luck, listeners,
good luck.
Viewers.
Good luck.
And, enjoy it. This episode of the podcast was presented by Tom Wheatley, Jay Maguire, Nick Harris-Fry, and Kieran Alger. The podcast was produced by Tom Wheatley. The music was by Fear of Tigers.